Greetings and welcome to ID the Future. I'm Casey Luskin, broadcasting with Discovery Institute Center for Science and Culture. We have on the show with us today Dr. Wolf Eckhard-Lonig, a geneticist who recently retired from the Max Planck Institute for Plant Breeding Research in Germany. We've had Dr. Lonig on the podcast a number of times over the past year or so. First, he discussed the evolution, or perhaps better put, the non-evolution of dogs, and then the evolution, or again, maybe better put, the non-evolution of the long-necked giraffe. Most recently, we've had him on with a wonderful podcast discussing the origin of carnivorous plants. But today, we're very privileged to have Dr. Lonig on the show with us again to talk about an area that he's published quite a bit on, the law of recurrent variation. So, Dr. Lonig, thank you so much for coming back on the podcast with us.
Okay, Casey, fine to be with you again.
Well, before we get into this too much, I'd like to read for our listeners an excerpt from one of your published papers on this topic. And I think it's a very helpful excerpt for giving our listeners an idea of where we're going with this today and what the problem that the law of recurrent variation poses for Darwinian evolution is. So here's what the excerpt said. It said, "Many of these researchers also raised the question, among others, why, even after inducing literally billions of induced mutations and further chromosome rearrangements, all the important mutation breeding programs have come to an end in the Western world instead of eliciting a revolution in plant breeding, either by successive rounds of selective micromutations, cumulative selection in the sense of the modern synthesis, or by larger mutations, and why the law of recurrent variation is endlessly corroborated by the almost infinite repetition of the spectra of mutant phenotypes in each and any new extensive mutagenesis experiment as predicted, instead of regularly producing a range of systematic new species." Now, I know that that was kind of a long quote for our listeners, but I hope that over the course of this podcast here, it'll become clear what Dr. Lonig means and why this law of recurrent variation that he is very interested in poses a problem for Darwinian evolution. So, Dr. Lonig, let's first talk about the famous Nobel laureate Hermann Josef Müller, who received the Nobel Prize for the discovery of the production of mutations by means of X-ray radiation many years ago. What did he expect for the induction of mutations concerning evolution in plant and animal breeding?
Well, he expected that in animal and plant breeding, a revolution would take place. And he also expected that there is an enormous potential of induced mutations for evolution. And he linked these two ideas. And the idea was that due to the fact that the induced mutations are the basis of evolution of all plants and animals, of all structures, of all forms of life. So if that was true, it should have been easy to use induced mutations to improve plant and animal species, especially for plant and animal breeding.
Now, what did these expectations that he had have to do with the initiation of the synthetic theory of evolution, also called Neo-Darwinism, of course, which, as many historians of biology agree, was primarily launched in 1937 by Dobzhansky's book, Genetics and the Origin of Species?
Perhaps it's best for me to quote Müller himself. He gave that famous Nobel lecture when receiving this Nobel Prize, and he said, quote, "Not only is this accumulation of many rare, mainly tiny changes, the chief means of artificial animal and plant improvement, but it is even more the way in which natural evolution has occurred under the guidance of natural selection. Thus, the Darwinian theory becomes implemented, and that is a point which he stressed several times, that I'm freed from the accretions of directed variation and of Lamarckism that once encumbered it." Well, interestingly, he wanted to free evolution from directed variation, in agreement with Charles Darwin. And interestingly, he first mentioned artificial animal and then plant improvement. He thought of both, animal and plant improvement. But it is even more the way in which natural evolution has occurred under the guidance of natural selection. So you link these two ideas, and it is granted that evolution would have taken place by mutations and selection and has produced the raw materials for the entire series of life forms on Earth, then, of course, it would also have been logical to expect application for animal and plant breeding.
Now, Dr. Lonig, let's talk about some of the methods that were being used by these plant and animal breeders who were trying to induce mutations. What three methods were being used that were thought to sort of successfully produce new species in a short period of time by these breeders?
Well, not necessarily new species, but advanced breeding varieties. For example, advanced pea varieties, advanced pea lines, or advanced cereals. The point is that in nature, it was agreed that evolution was very slow. In fact, Muller was convinced that for the first time, he had willfully changed the hereditary material and that evolution could then speed it up. So evolution was viewed to be a very slow process, and now Muller thought that evolution could now speed it up. And the same was applied to animal and plant breeding. He thought that breeding procedures could now speed it up. And there were three different time-lapse methods, which were complementing each other for a complete success in a rather short period of time for the breeders. First, multiplication of mutation rates. Mutation rates could be multiplied 1,000 times and more. Then, well-aimed recombination of mutants, which looked to be promising. And then, of course, human beings have the possibility of intelligent selection. So, multiplication of mutation rates, well-aimed recombination, and intelligent selection. Three time-lapse methods. And in the USA, as well as in several countries of Europe and Asia, the new research branch of mutation breeding was launched, first in the 1930s, and especially later after the Second World War. And there are many organizations, and an enormous funding took place to establish the new breeding procedure called mutation breeding. So mutation breeding was launched, and one could say everything that was possible in science was made to guarantee a full success on the basis of the idea that Muller had, for the first time, he had willfully changed the hereditary material, and that evolution could then be speeded up.
Now, what were the main or basic results of these mutation breeding efforts after some 40 years of many efforts and much financial input in the U.S. and Europe and Asia? Were there any positive results?
Well, people living at that time, scientists, breeders, all unanimously report that there was an enormous euphoria at that time, that now plant breeding and animal breeding could be revolutionized by mutation breeding. And now they started this new mutation breeding in many countries around the world. And after 40 years, I quote Simmons, one of the leading breeders. He wrote in his book on the principles of crop improvement on mutation breeding some 40 years later, quote, "Earlier over-optimism to the effect that induced mutations were about to revolutionize plant breeding has given place to a more sober appreciation of the technique as a valuable supplement to more conventional techniques in certain rather restricted circumstances." And he later speaks again for the early days of over-optimism. Quote, "Very many programs failed, especially in the early days of over-optimism, to produce anything useful." Quote end. And he says, "Nowadays we see mutation induction simply as one technique, which is occasionally useful in enlarging the genetic base of a program in a limited and highly specific fashion." Perhaps we can speak about that limited and highly specific fashion a bit later. But all these people working about mutation breeding agreed on that point. I may quote in German textbooks by Leibengut, Genetics of Breeding, and he has the same to say. He says, mutation breeding is viewed to be less an autonomous method of breeding than an occasionally used supplement to traditional methods. And interestingly, you remember that Mahler predicted enormous progress for animal and plant breeding. First, he mentioned animal breeding. What about animal breeding? Leibengut adds, quote, in contrast to plants, animals are genetically more severely balanced. Hence, all kinds of mutations are even more frequently lethal and more strongly diminishing vitality and fertility in animals. Well, one can say that animal breeding collapsed totally after not many trials, because I personally think that there are also severe ethical problems involved in the artificial mutagenesis of birds, mammals, and other animals capable of feeding pain. One can say there's absolutely no future for mutation breeding in animals. In plant breeding, there's less than 1% of all induced mutations that have been chosen as possible candidates for further investigations. And again, of these less than 1%, only about 0.5 to 1% have passed the necessary further field trials until they were found suitable for commercial use. Well, if you calculate that about only 0.5% of all induced mutations were suitable for further investigations, that again only 0.5% displayed a positive selection value for the breeder, perhaps I can stress and emphasize that point, a positive selection value for the breeder, this proportion is about 40,000 to 1. Meaning one mutation thought to be positive in about 40,000 other mutations which were negative or useless for the breeder. And in animals, you can only make some educated guesses. If one multiplies the proportionate number of disadvantageous mutations by the factor of 10 in comparison to the plant, the result would already be around 100,000 to 400,000 negative or unavailing or neutral mutants to one useful for breeding research. Well, on this basis, on such experiences made in dozens of years, in more than 40 years and perhaps more than 50 years, the result was that almost all commercial breeding stations in the USA and Europe have deleted mutation breeding from their research programs. Just to quote some summaries, Perlman on this topic, he said, one can only conclude that the results from mutation breeding in varietal development of the major field crops have been rather meager in relation to the efforts expended. There's a German textbook, Peter von Sengbusch, textbook of botany, where he writes, in spite of an enormous financial expenditure, the attempt to cultivate increasingly productive varieties of by irradiation widely proved to be a failure. And I've checked almost all, as far as I could find it, the literature on this question. And the distinguished German plant breeders, Fischbeck, Rebellin, and Stutzer, are in accord with all these statements just quoted. Quote, the objectives of practical plant breeding to achieve new opportunities of a gradual and continuous amelioration of tried and tested breeding varieties could not be realized. And then they speak also of the special application of the neo-Darwinian concept of micro-mutations. And these three authors, distinguished German and leading plant breeders, said, quote, also the modified concept of a direct use of so-called micro-mutations remained unsuccessful. And then they gave the reasons for that. And there's an enormous gulf, interestingly, an enormous gulf between the optimistic descriptions of mutants by so many authors in plant breeding research during that first period of time and the later widespread disappointment regarding mutation breeding, so quotation, the widely spread disappointment regarding mutation breeding to the disconcerting reality. So one of the leading authors, Mickey in Vienna, he said, in contrast to such rare achievements, there have been innumerable promising mutants reported in innumerable publications, which never seemed to appear again on the stage after their first presentation. Nevertheless, there remains a respectable number of mutants which even the self-critical breeder or geneticist have seriously considered as progressive, and of which only very few so far have contributed to the development of better crop cultivars. You may check these data, by the way, in my paper on mutation breeding, evolution, the law of recurrent variation. You can check the literature and the full quotations. These are all quotations by leading geneticists and leading breeders of Europe and the USA. So to sum it up, well, A, many programs fail to produce anything useful. B, next quotation, almost all mutants distinguish themselves by negative selection values. C, all kinds of mutants are even more frequently lesions and more strongly diminishing vitality and fertility in animals. The overall results, quote, have been rather meager in relation to the efforts expended. E, in spite of an enormous financial expenditure, mutation breeding widely proved to be a failure. Next quotation, the objective of practical plant breeding could not be realized, neither by macro mutations nor by micro mutations. And G, none of the modifying measures applied could help fulfilling the ultimate hope, quotation, the ultimate hope of obtaining more of the better mutants. So they modified these procedures almost indefinitely. And this was of no help fulfilling the ultimate hope of obtaining more of the better mutants. So one can say that the overall result, that the strong anticipations concerning a revolution in plant breeding and also in animal breeding, remember what Muller thought when receiving the Nobel Prize, all these strong anticipations, the intense euphoria, ended up in a worldwide failure.
Well, Dr. Lonig, I think that we are going a little bit long for this first podcast, but I hope that our listeners will stay tuned for more with Dr. Wolf-Heckard Lonig on the Law of Recurrent Variation. I'm Casey Luskin with ID the Future. Thanks for listening.
This program was recorded by Discovery Institute's Center for Science and Culture. ID the Future is copyright Discovery Institute 2013. For more information, visit www.intelligentdesign.org or www.idthefuture.com.